Welcome to ACC Nation Podcast, episode 81. The crew today, Chris Bond in Tampa, Will Ogenen in Minneapolis, Xavion in Washington, and I'm Jim Quist in Richmond. Is the ACC out of the running for the college football playoffs? Early rankings are headed our way. We're going to talk a little bit about that. At accnation.net this week, get a look at the top-ranked ACC men's and women's soccer teams. Who's on top of this week's field hockey polls? You'll find out simply by going to the website. Speaking of hockey, we've got ice hockey rankings, too. Virginia names the first African-American woman Power 5 Conference Athletic Director. Interesting story behind her background and what she's bringing to the table. Good stuff there. The ACC Nation Power Poll has an oddity. We're all battling it out for top spot in the pick. USA Today preseason basketball poll is out. Number one, Duke. Number nine, UNC. Number 12, Miami. Number 14, Notre Dame. Number 16, Louisville. Receiving votes, number 27, Virginia. Number 39, Virginia Tech. Number 44, Georgia Tech. And number 47, FSU. Well, you guys want to touch on any of that? Or touch any of it, period, before we get into football?
Well, I don't think we're out of it as far as the national title goes. I still think Clemson is still the team to beat out there in this side of the country. I don't, I wouldn't want to dare call it a clunker against Syracuse, but, you know, they did that against Pitt last year, and it certainly didn't stop their run from bringing home the trophy.
Mm-hmm. True that.
The thing that really stands out in terms of Clemson, now that they have the one loss, the thing is they really don't have anybody else on their schedule the rest of the way right now that you can look at and say that's going to be like that really top-notch quality win that they're going that will help elevate them. Is obviously, you know, we've seen what, you know, has happened in the Atlantic this year. Louisville isn't as good as they were last year. Florida State is completely nosedive compared to last year. So really, they're when they get over to the ACC title game, assuming they do, we still got to watch out for NC State. But, you know, if they do, I mean, who knows where Miami's going to be ranked at that time. I don't think they're going to be in the top 10 like they are right now. You know, but what if it's Virginia Tech? You know, they could easily be up there, you know, a top 15 team. But I think Clemson's best shot at winning it is basically teams above them falling, and I certainly see that happening to everybody but Bama.
Right. Yeah, okay. So among that top five, who would you pick to take a nosedive?
Really, you could argue any of them.
Well, yeah, you could argue, including Alabama, to be quite frank about it. I'm not completely sold on their total domination this season. So,
but then again, you know, who exactly is a threat to them in that conference?
Nobody.
Georgia, maybe.
Sorry.
Georgia, yes. Georgia is the only team in the conference that would have a shot.
I think they'd still throw a one-loss Alabama team in there regardless if they did lose to Georgia, say, in a conference championship?
Probably. But I guess it depends on where Georgia's sitting at the time.
They could still get in, but it might drop their seeding from one to maybe four.
Nobody.
I'd have to look at Alabama's schedule from, you know, who is exactly is their quality win. As of right now, their best win is Florida State.
And
that's not exactly a great win anymore.
Well,
not when everybody else is getting it.
When you're well, yeah. I would say that is their best win. And I wouldn't compare Florida State today to Florida State back then, obviously. Mm-hmm. I think if they had gone the entire game with Francois, it might have been a different picture. So that's my thought. And a penny will get you absolutely nothing. So now the power poll. We've got an oddity there. We've got you guys.
There's four of them, actually, but.
Well,
yeah.
Those are the people picking. That's a whole different ballgame. We've got three number threes. And this is, you could almost see this coming. And it doesn't surprise me that much, but then again, it is a little odd. The top five is the same as it was last week. Okay. And that is Clemson, Virginia Tech. And then you've got, you know, the three are NC State, and Miami and Notre Dame. And now NC State, Miami, and Notre Dame are all tied point-wise for third place. Any surprises there for you guys? That, I mean, obviously I look at your vote and I go, well, you know, you definitely have an opinion about where they should or should not be, but does that really surprise anybody?
Well, I'm not sold on either NC State or Miami, so I'll just out myself as the Notre Dame voter there.
Well, I know who the anti Notre Dame voter is.
Damn right.
Well, yeah, I think Notre Dame's going to expose both of those other threes right there, in my opinion. In the coming weeks, especially this Saturday, I've certainly called Notre Dame to win that one.
Interesting. This is really going to be an interesting couple of weeks. It's, you know. Okay, let's get into some football.
Yeah, nobody's holding a grudge about Notre Dame's most recent win, are they?
Oh, not at all.
All right, I got to tell you this. Okay, I just got back from Chicago, and
I'm sorry.
We had this. the infinitely long TSA line, and if this were a political show, I'd be railing about the TSA, but I'm not going to go there. There were a lot of fans from USC or USC fans in there, and also Notre Dame fans. And I really, really wanted to ask, how'd that game work out for you? But I just knew. I thought better of it.
Was never heard from again.
Yeah, that's right. They buried me somewhere in Chicago. But they had a very glum look on their face, and it was a hangover from that game. And I'm sure that Xavion has that same look.
No, I'm okay.
Yeah.
Well, he's got a face for a podcast right now, that's for sure.
Don't we all? All right, let's get into the football, guys. Let's get into this first game, the Louisville and FSU game. And we're going to start with Xavion. And let's talk about what happened here. Is this a fair representation of either team, or is this really, you know, does the score say it all?
It was a back and forth game for the most part. Teams were trading touchdowns pretty much for the whole entire game, and Louisville was just able to hit a the last second field goal with 5 seconds left in the game. So I don't know. You have a true freshman quarterback for Florida State leading that team, and it's not Florida State that we had at the beginning of the season, clearly, and it's just not – nothing has really worked out for them. The fact that they've dropped four games is still truly surprising, even with, you know, the injuries and stuff like that. But it was back and forth, and neither one of these teams really have produced to the extent that we thought they would at the beginning of the season. So at the end of the day, it was going to be a toss-up game, and that's what it came down to, whoever had the ball last and made the last play necessary to win.
Yeah, I was excited for Florida State, especially for Blackman as he was driving. And it was so disappointing to watch that fumble there as the game was coming to an end, because I really thought he was onto something. You could see him really working the mechanics and doing well. And then when he came out, it looked like he was absolutely crushed. And I hope he does not carry that with him very much further than just this game. Now, I'm much more disappointed in Louisville overall for the season than I am Florida State. I mean, Florida State is just one of those things that, you know, happens. Will, give us your thoughts on this game.
Well, talking about Louisville, I mean, I've said it before, Lamar Jackson is a one-man band, and without him, that team is absolutely nothing. And the way he was able to run the ball in that game, you know, was a huge factor. The FSU really had no answer for him. I think as far as Florida State goes, I think You know, we see more and more. Blackman isn't necessarily ready for the moment right now, but he just kind of got thrust into the situation, obviously, with the season-ending injury to Francois. But, you know, looking at Florida State ahead with Patrick out for a while, you know, what does this do to the running, or to the rushing attack? I jokingly kind of tweeted out the other night when the news came out that I thought Cam Akers might get like 40 carries against Boston College this week. But you know what? They may need to do that. They may need every single one of them to beat Boston College.
Yeah, this is true, Chris. You jumped off the bandwagon. You're not a bandwagon fan anyway. You're a diehard Seminole fan, but you were right up front and very forthright and honest about this. You picked Louisville to win this game, and that's exactly what happened. And you're not cutting them any slack for next week either.
Not really. As Will pointed out, and we tweeted that I wouldn't be surprised if Boston College wins by two scores. That's more in Boston College, actually, because they are right now. They, quite frankly, are almost the hottest team in the league, whereas FSU is just reeling right now. But ever as we go on, it's less about the freshman quarterback. Blackman actually is very accurate. Last week he was 18 of 21. This week he was 16 of 26. He's doing pretty well. He's doing everything he's asked to do. And is he making mistakes? Yeah, two interceptions this weekend. One of them really wasn't his fault, went right off the receiver, Mykwon Murray's hands. That should have been caught. The fumble, yeah, it certainly can be blamed on him the way he was carrying it. But he's having moments now where he's growing up, and there are sparks. And that's where Fisher is doing a good job, is coaching him up and keeping him, building him. Because right now he's got the future of this program to think about. This season's long gone as far as anything what they had planned or were hoping for. What this really is about is a free fall of a defense, a staff that is in disarray, that is, the fans just want gone. And actually, there was an occurrence at the end of the game where Fisher got in a shouting match with one of the fans, which initially was Fisher took a lot of heat for it, but it turned out just a few feet away was Charles Kelly, the defense coordinator's 12-year-old son. And, you know, the young man doesn't need to hear about his dad should be fired.
Yeah.
And so I think Fisher was doing the right thing by sticking up for that, you know, for Charles Kelly, even though I think Charles Kelly will certainly be gone along with most of the defensive staff, and rightfully so. There's certainly no excuse for saying that in front of like his family.
Yeah,
because he's still a good man with a job. But as far as back to football here, I think you know, FSU is just the solutions to the problems are not reachable until the season ends. It's just what you're hoping for is not missing your first bowl game since Bobby Bowden's first season in 1976. That's how long of a run they've been on. I don't know. It's hard to watch as a fan of the school that I've been my whole life, but at the same time, we have to call things the way they are. All things come to an end, and this is part of the cycle of college football. And the roster's loaded. It's just not being managed well by the staff. And I'm confident Fisher will find the right people to come in next year.
Okay, I really wanted to get your opinion on that, because I know that you're limited on your time with us this evening. So we'll see how many more we can get you in on here. Will, let's move on to this Pitt and Duke game. Was this really any kind of a surprise for you?
A little bit. I didn't think Pitt would run the ball with the success they did. Darren Hall went for 254 yards in this game, including a 92-yarder. Pretty darn impressive showing by the kid. And all, they ran the ball 57 times and really did an excellent job of controlling the ball. And Duke, you know, they had their opportunities, you know, at the end of the game, but you know, for whatever the reason, it feels like Daniel Jones has just completely regressed from last season. It was 15 of 33 in this game, and the running game couldn't really get going. Pitt Pitt did a good job of shutting that down. But, you know, definitely props to Pitt in this situation. They found something they were really good at and just worked and just kept doing it. And it was running the football.
Smart move. And Chris, Pitt 24, Duke 17. Your thoughts on that game?
Well, Duke, on the one hand, you start out 4-0. You're feeling great in that first month, and now you're 4-4 in a free fall. And like Will was saying, Daniel Jones, this is a dark side of him that we did not anticipate on seeing. He just looks lost out there. On the other side of it for Pitt, you know, Darren Hall is now in the record books for having the two longest plays in school history. Broke a 100-year-old record. And when you consider they've had great backs like Ironhead Hayward and the Heisman Trophy winner and Tony Dorsett, and neither one of them had running plays that long, that's a considerable feat and certainly a shot in the arm this Pitt program desperately needed. 3-5 now. A bowl still is within reach. There's still a lot of problems in that defense that Daniel Jones certainly wasn't able to expose that future opponents will. But it's certainly the win that Narduzzi desperately needed at this time for his crew.
Desperate is a key word here, Xavion. Big win for Pitt. And certainly, as the guys have pointed out so far, Daniel Jones, you have any thoughts there?
I think it was the time of possession was mightily in Pittsburgh's favor at 39 minutes with the ball compared to Duke's 20. And Duke was playing catch-up pretty much for the majority of the game. Explosive plays by the running back from Pitt. Darren Hall opened up the game with a 79-yard run. And you're automatically – and that's the first play. They only had one play, 11 seconds. And he just takes off and for a touchdown. And they never really recovered from that. And if you're playing catch-up, you're basically forced to throw a ball. And if you're not having success throwing the ball, you're going to be having a lot of three and outs. And they were only – they were 3-10 out of on third down efficiency. So they weren't executing in the passing game at all. And when that happens, upsets like this, I still classify it as an upset, even though either one of the teams was or ranked or really highly favored. But I really did not expect Duke to drop this game to Pitt, especially with them losing Max Brown. Even though DiNucci's had in-game experience, he still didn't do enough to make me feel better about him starting. He was 8 of 18, I believe it was, throwing the ball. So Daniel Jones has definitely regressed, and we're seeing him unfold in our eyes, honestly.
You know, if DiNucci's having that much luck with that porn stash, maybe it's time for me to grow one too. Let's go to Chris. Let's go to Chris. Let's talk about
on that note.
On that note, let's talk to Chris. Boston College and Virginia. Boy, that was a surprise ending, score wise, for I think just about anybody who had a lick of sense here was not, you know, I will say I did pick Boston College to win that, and only because of the defensive nature, but that score, that spread, man, I never would have seen that, Chris.
If you had a crystal ball and picked that, nobody would have believed you, including, I'm sure, Coach Dazio. But better late than never for the offense here. 364 rushing yards in the victory against Louisville last week. And a whole lot more this week against Virginia. They are a train running downhill. And as I was alluding earlier, FSU catching now them at a bad time. They're going up for Red Bandana Day, the Alumni Day, which is their annual alumni homecoming there. And that's going to be – they're going to be fired up now coming in with this record here of 4-4. Is it enough to? Because 2 weeks ago we were talking about Dazio's done. There's no way. Is he back from the dead? I still don't think so. I still think this is a program that's really wanting a little more than just pulling it out of fire at the end of every season. But who knows? They do still have to run the table. I think it could be possible for Dazio to be back there next year, but certainly an impressive, impressive win. Virginia, how did the wheel come off so quickly in this game? Actually, I was thinking Virginia would be up winning this by 2, 3, or 4 scores if they could jump early, but it just never happened. And Boston College defense must have felt like it was a mirage to get such a lead, because they finally have a lead that they can protect. And Landry and all his teammates certainly do a good job of that.
Xavion, do you think the Eagles have finally found what it takes to make their offense work, or is there something else in play in this game?
I mean, for this game, they found it to work, but in terms of going forward in the season, I still don't think so. I think this is going to look back. This is going to be a good loss for UVA. They were riding a little bit of a high, so to speak, with all the surprising wins and the early 5-1 record. So I think looking back, this will be a good loss. But you got to look at too, in the first quarter, Boston College scored first. It was 15 plays, 3 points. But then the next two drives, or next couple drives, excuse me, they scored on explosive plays. So they had 4 plays for a touchdown, 76 yards, and then 3 plays for another touchdown on a 76-yard pass. So that kind of blew the game out, and that can those explosive plays can take the breath out of the defense, and I think that's what happened to UVA. They got hit in the mouth, and they weren't able to recover. So, like I said, I still think it was a good loss for them in terms of going forward, and I'm not completely convinced Boston College's offense has gotten it together, not even remotely close.
Okay. Will, let's talk about this game, and I know this is this cuts a little close to home, and let's talk more about the Virginia side of things here. I think Xavion's given us a really good picture of what may or may not be happening with Boston College, especially their offense, which has always had this huge question mark. What happened with Virginia?
I'll say offensively, the game plan just was questionable at best by Robert and I. Boston College is one of the worst rushing defenses in the ACC, and they just came out and just chucked the ball all over the field unnecessarily. And it didn't help either that Bankert was kind of off. He only was 17 of 33 for 126 yards, but the biggest issue I had in this game was Jordan Ellis only getting 12 carries. He should be up way, over closer to 20, if not over 20 carries, with what they were facing. It didn't. And I know at one point Banker got hurt, and with the score the way it was, they brought in Lindell Stone, and his first collegiate pass was a pick six that was off the hands of a receiver, and it was just not a great welcome to college football to him. But you got to give Boston College, tons of credit. They were well prepared. Anthony Brown had the game of his career so far, 19 of 24 for 275 and 3 scores. I don't think any BC fan could have imagined him putting up stats like that coming into the game.
Well, an interesting game, and again, maybe that score is mid-season does this. We end up with teams going in to simplify it, to just go the black and white route here. Teams are going in two different directions. You're either starting to click and play well together as a team, or you've been hurt by injuries and, those key losses are really kind of throwing you off rhythm and you just can't find that groove again. So there's that black and white. You got those two sides to the ball. And midseason is about when this happens, and that's why teams like Clemson get knocked off by Syracuse. It's just there's something that throws off their normal rhythm. And I think to some degree, I'm going to say that Boston College is finding a little bit of their groove on offense. And I will agree with Xavion. I don't think they're anywhere near being what they should be or what they should be doing. I've also noticed something that Bankert always has this sort of I don't even know what to call it, but it's like Daniel Jones. It's like in midseason, something happens to these guys. They just it's like they go blank, and stuff is not clicking for them. So, Banker, the last two games has been a little flat to me. So maybe that's part of it. You throw those two together there, and maybe that's what we're coming up with. I want to thank Chris for joining us for the limited amount of time that he had this evening. And also thank you, Xavion. Xavion staying with us came in at the very last second because he had some things that he was involved with earlier and was kind enough to kind of fly down the road and join us this evening as well. So, guys.
No problem.
Yes, and always good to have you guys. Will, thanks. Let's stick with you, Will. And this abomination, the Tar Heels, this is a team that has just been destroyed by injuries. I think they've lost sight of what they're out there playing for. They are not working well together. And then they face a team that's really clicking, really starting to find their stride in Virginia Tech. Let's talk about that game.
Well, yeah, I think you could have just stopped that after you said North Carolina's just destroyed. You could have just stopped right there, and you would have been absolutely right.
I want you guys to pile on a little bit here. So,
well, I mean, trust me, I think Xavion and I will absolutely pile on here. but yeah, I think the thing about this game is it was all a lot of great plays on special teams by Virginia Tech. I believe I know also they had a pick six. I believe Greg Stroman had a punt return touchdown. He absolutely, Stroman is one of the better punt returners in the league, so he's definitely capable of housing one at any moment, and he certainly did in this game. And offensively, it wasn't that they weren't great, but when the opposition is just putrid, it really says something. When you look at North Carolina trotted out three quarterbacks and they were a combined 8 of 22, and threw two picks. That would be Brandon Harris, who he does that a lot. There's a reason I was never high on Carolina this year in the first place, and I just didn't think he'd be a good quarterback for this offense. And it doesn't help either that Carolina ran 42 times for a grand total of 54 yards, Ooh. Solid 1.3 yards per carry. Gosh. But some of that too, Virginia Tech is just getting in the backfield and just completely disrupting anything and everything that the Tar Heels tried to do in the passing game. I lost count of how many sacks they had, but the Hokies just, that deep, I've been very high on that defense, and they certainly put a top-notch defensive effort up in this game.
That's a Bud Foster team to a T. Defense,
six sacks, by the way. Six sacks.
Defense and special teams, they rank very high in team efficiency. Their offense is getting there. They're really not where they should be to be. I hate to upset Hokie fans, but they're not a championship caliber team yet. Okay.
I don't think that would upset many of them. I think they would actually agree with you, but that's just me. I still don't think they have the consistent enough a running game for that to happen.
Yeah, they need to find that rhythm, and soon. It's going to be very important soon. On offense, they've got the defense and special teams down, and they are firing on all eight cylinders there. Xavion, let's talk about this game, the Hokies, Tar Heels, observations here.
So what I like to do sometimes when watching games, or if I don't get a chance to watch a game, I just head over to the stat sheet and look at, kind of get a general idea. Regardless of looking at the score, I try to get a better idea of what actually went on during the game. So I'm going to go over some of the stats real quick for North Carolina and Virginia Tech. First downs, North Carolina had 11, Virginia Tech had 21. Third down efficiency, 3 of 17 for North Carolina, 8 of 17 for Virginia Tech. Total yards, 172 to 383. Virginia Tech won that. Passing yards, Virginia Tech won. Completions and attempts, Virginia Tech won. Rushing yards, Virginia Tech won. Penalties, Virginia Tech won. Turnovers, Virginia Tech won. The only stat that they didn't do better than North Carolina was the time of possession. And that's because they were scoring on offense, or special teams, they were scoring on defense. So
that stop, they're already dead.
Like, it was, UNC got completely outplayed from start to finish, and it was not surprising in the least bit. This is the North Carolina that we've grown to see and thought they would honestly be at the beginning of the season. I agree with both you guys with Virginia Tech, your comments on Virginia Tech about the defense and the special teams being where it needs to be at, but the offense isn't still there. But if that offense gets to where it needs to be, they could definitely be contenders, not only for possibly the ACC spot in the playoff, but definitely in the top spot in the ACC, for sure. If that offense gets rolling, kind of like what we saw the first week against West Virginia, that's just very, very scary Virginia Tech team.
Let me ask both of you something, since you've presented this scenario here for me to sort of chew on. Let's all chew on it together.
My favorite.
Let's say that Virginia Tech, at the very least, the way they were playing against West Virginia on offense, okay? But let's elevate it, because ideally they will be better than that. Now, that raises them in, puts them into a position where they're performing much above average. Right now, they're not performing. They're right around average. They're just barely, okay, according to stats. All right? But if they can get that into 60, 65, 70% efficiency, is this a team that can readily knock off Clemson? Xavion, let me stick with you on that.
Absolutely. Again, this is Virginia Tech, and for the last 10 years, or even longer than honestly than I've probably been alive, they've been known for their special teams and their defense. And all the years that they've had huge, great success, that's when the offense has been a complement to both those things, where mm-hmm. the defense plays great and keeps the three and out, and then the special teams gets a block or a good punt return to get great field position, and then the offense does its job, and it's puts easy points on the board. So if this, like you said, 65 to 70% efficiency on offense starts happening, easily, yeah, they could definitely. I won't say easily, but they could definitely knock off a Clemson team.
100%. All right. Now, Will, you want to reflect on the same thing here and throw in your two cents?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Xavion. I think they absolutely could beat Clemson. I think, we mentioned, the biggest thing is, those two teams are actually fairly close to each other defensively in terms of yards per game. I know Virginia Tech is ranked 13th nationally. I can't remember what Clemson is. I think they're just a few spots ahead of them. But, their special teams is a spot where I feel like Virginia Tech is better, at least in the return game. We saw what Strowman did against North Carolina, housing that punt. I think kicking game, I mean, Joey Sly is up and down. Clemson's kicker's having a pretty good year too, but I think the thing of it is you have to, it really depends on the two quarterbacks. They're still young into their careers. What version of them is going to show up that night?
Mm-hmm. Very true. Okay. Well, let's stick with the Miami and Syracuse game. And let me just throw out to both of you. I know Xavion is high on Miami. I'm still not there. I keep seeing these performances where they're just getting by, by the hair of their chinny chin chin. And that doesn't strike me as being a championship quality team. Will?
When the opposing quarterback throws four interceptions, yet you only win by eight, it really you know, that kind of gives you some pause. I mean, Eric Dungy just looked all out of sorts in this game. And he threw, like I say, he completed 13 passes to his team, four more to the other team. But still, he threw the ball 41 times, and he just was missing, you know, people left and right. But I will give him credit, though, that him and Dante Strickland really ran the ball well. I mean, Syracuse averaged over 5 yards per carry as a team. Strickland averaged, you know, 7.5 yards a carry and went for a buck five. You know, Dungy went for 100 on the nose, you know, running the ball 20 times. But, I know Steve Ishmael was hurt in this game. I do not know. I can't remember if he came back at all or what his status is going forward. But, you know, looking at it from the Miami end, you know, once again, Malik Rozier is progressing. You know, every week he's looking more and more comfortable, and he definitely belongs in that top tier of quarterbacks in the ACC. And you know, talk about Travis Homer, he had another solid game, and it feels like nothing's really changed in the backfield at Miami with Walton's absence.
Savion, give us a little more perspective here from the standpoint of somebody who I think maybe is far more sold on Miami than I would be, or I am at this point. Tell us why you think Miami is all that.
Because of the head coach, Mark Richt.
Is he out there on the field playing, man? That's all I'm asking.
No, he's not. He's not on the field playing. But when you have a leader of young men that can make the right decisions and help put his players in the best position to win, that's the recipe for success. Mm-hmm. And I'll get on that topic more in depth when we get to the Notre Dame and USC game. But absolutely, I mean, they're high on my list because, again, they haven't lost yet. Yes, there's been near mishaps and stuff like that, but they're still 6-0 and undefeated in the conference. So they get respect off of that alone for right now. But once they lose, who knows where they could end up in my personal power pool, and depending on how they lose as well. This way that they've been playing has been brewing for a couple of weeks, so a loss is somewhat on the horizon unless, again, Mark Richt can continue to pull games out of his you-know-what and help them, you know, continue this streak so far that they're on. But like Will said, if an opposing team quarterback throws gives you four opportunities – to score more points and you only walk away at the end of the game with an eight-point win, that is 100% cause for concern in terms of how your team played that day. But going forward, that's also at the same time you have to look at that as great, because Syracuse just came off of beating Clemson and you were able to kind of take that energy away from them even when they committed four turnovers. So it was a good win for Miami, but They're definitely kind of on my watch list for my power pool.
There's no doubt that Mark Richt, and you hit that on the head, he's an excellent coach. Mark Richt is a thinking man's coach, and it's fun to watch him during games because he has a very calm demeanor and a very focused demeanor and gets things done. I am looking forward to where Miami goes in the future. I think that Mark Richt is turning the corner quicker than most people may have anticipated, but I still think he has a little bit more to go. Savion, let's stick with you here. This next game, I thought was a fairly evenly matched football game on paper. It seemed to play out that way for the most part, but then something happened, and I'm not sure exactly what that was. I didn't get to watch this game. Georgia Tech and Wake Forest ended up 38-24, and I kind of get the feeling that that game might have been closer than a two-touchdown spread.
Oh, it definitely went for the first half. It was 21-13 Wake Forest, but then Georgia Tech stick to what Georgia Tech does, and that's run the football. And when you're able to run the football for 427 yards, in most cases, except for I want to say two this year for Georgia Tech, where they out completely controlled the ball and the clock and ran the ball to about 300-400 yards, you should win. And that luckily worked out for them this go around. 427 yards rushing on 66 attempts. Controlled the ball for 35 minutes. Didn't turn the ball over. If you look at those stats alone, that's always a recipe for victory. It was a great effort by both teams, and unfortunately, Wake Forest lost. But this isn't a knock on Wake Forest at all. Because if you look at some of the teams that we've talked about, from Syracuse to Georgia Tech to Wake Forest, their overall records might not indicate really how good they are, but it reminds me of the SEC from a couple years back, where all the teams that weren't at the very, very top spent the rest of the season beating up on each other, where they all were, honestly, any given week, any of these teams could win a game. So it was a great game, to say the least.
Yeah, I think that's a good analogy, that at one time when the SEC was a lot more even, and it wasn't just one team, essentially. The ACC has become that, and really almost all the way down to the bottom teams. I know every time I look at the power poll, with the exception of one team this year, it becomes a challenge. You're looking at 14 teams, and of course we throw in Notre Dame in our power poll. But when you look at those 15 teams, one of them is not doing well, and that's okay. We'll just toss that out as an anomaly. But basically 14 teams in there are not doing too daggone bad. And, you know, you could probably argue that about half the conference has an opportunity to take the other half out at any given moment. So, Will, your reflections on this Yellow Jackets win over the Deacs.
Yeah, it was really a tale of two halves. I mean, Wake put up 21 in the first half, had an 8-point lead going into the halftime, but Georgia Tech outscored them 25-3 in the second half, and it was really all about the running game. And Taquan Marshall had two really long runs in the second half. One went for 49 early in the third quarter, and then he broke out a 70-yard run at the end of the game to seal the win for the Yellow Jackets. And you know, he continues to be really, really strong running the football, and went for 163 yards. And his teammate Kervante Benson went for a 136 as well. And yeah, this is, you know, they played ball control. They had the ball for, what was it, over 30, almost 36 minutes in this game. And, you know, when you control, you can do a lot. You obviously ran, like Xavion mentioned, they ran the ball 66 times, you know, at this game. When you run like that, you can really control the clock. But I will say on Wake's behalf, you know, they Kate Kearney had a nice game going for 92 yards, but you know, John Walford was okay, 17-30. He really struggled in the second half of this game, and to some extent was a part of the reason Wake Forest lost. That he was actually pretty good in the first half, but I think this also says too, you know, Georgia Tech is probably the third best team in the Coastal right now, but they're definitely a notch, you know, below Virginia Tech and Miami at this point.
Let's go on to this this next game, which is out of conference, but again, part of what we like to talk about, and that is the Notre Dame and USC game. And I honestly did not envision this game going the direction that it did. I know that Xavion didn't. He's a USC fan.
Hold on a second there.
And I got to see some of this game. I was, I was in Chicago. I was sitting in a bar with about 20 people, you know, doing the tip and the adult beverage routine. And we had probably about 20 TVs going. You know, there was the Houston baseball game going on and a bunch of other football games. But this one caught my attention, especially when I started seeing the score going in the direction that it was. Let's get some analysis here. We're going to get, a two-sided view here. Will, we'll start with you. And then we'll go with the Trojan fan.
Yeah. totally shocked at how this game went too. I thought, like, I when going in the first couple days of the week, I had USC winning, but as the week went on, I actually changed my pick over to Notre Dame. Just something told me that, you know, Notre Dame was just going to be able to run the football, and USC wasn't going to be able to stop it. But I also thought this game would end up being a shootout. But you know, when they did, it just seemed like USC couldn't get anything going on the ground. You know, their star running back Ronald Jones manages 32 yards on 12 carries, and I'm sure Xavion can explain, you know, why that happened better than I could. But you know, Notre Dame, you know, we've talked about what exactly why they've been so successful this year, getting them to 6-1, and it's been that running game between Josh Adams and quarterback Brandon Wood. You know, Wimbush, those two went for almost 300 yards total as a team. And you look at, you know, what Notre Dame's done this year, that's been their bread and butter. You know, they run the ball, run some more. And, you know, that schedule or that record looks even better when you look at their one loss being a 1-point loss to a currently undefeated Georgia team.
Well, I know at the beginning of the season, actually before then, Kelly had pointed out that he was going to take the Irish into a ground and pound sort of game. And he had the beef on the line to do that. And it looks like it's working out. On defense, they are doing, I think, equally well. Let's take a look at it now from the Trojans' side, and what went wrong here and what went right, Xavion.
All right. So going into the game, offense and defensive line for us, we're starting, I want to say, three true freshmen on the offensive line and then two on the defensive line. There's no bye week for USC this whole entire season, so the team is absolutely beat up. There's injuries everywhere, especially the key players on both, like I said, the offensive and defensive line. And right now, the team has probably looked their best against Stanford. And ever since that game, kind of like what we've been saying and seeing with Miami, too many games have been too close for comfort, and it finally, excuse my language, bit them in the ass. The offensive line, like I said, three true freshmen who really probably have no business out there right now, led to 76 yards on 31 carries for a 2.5 average, especially against Notre Dame's level experience on the defensive line. Tillery was an absolute monster that just was not contained at all, and he just had his way with the offensive line for the whole entire game. Defensively, missing a lot of our key defensive linemen. Our starting defensive tackle got into a car accident during the week and was in concussion protocol. He was ruled out for the game. The next man up was a freshman defensive tackle who's played all season. He's out for this season with a back injury. So we're going to a true freshman right there who has no real game experience to clog up the middle to stop this crazy, ridiculously good Notre Dame rushing attack. And for 377 yards, clearly that didn't happen. Come to find out, Sam Darnold has been dealing with an ankle injury since the Washington State loss. And that's kind of been a concern for me for some weeks now. He hasn't looked like Sam Darnold of old. There's always been something off. His accuracy has been off. Sometimes the receivers aren't making plays, but more cases than not in recent weeks, his accuracy has been off, and it kind of makes sense now that it's an ankle injury that's probably been affecting him. But to start off the game, yes, my confidence was out of this world for USC. I'm a homer. I'm a stan. I'm a true fan, whatever you want to call it. But the moment that first snap was fumbled, the game was Notre Dame's to lose. Too many times this season has USC turned the ball over against non-quality opponents and be able to bounce back. The same thing happened against Oregon State, which is probably one of the worst teams in college football, and we were able to win 38-10. But you play a team, very good team, a supremely good team in Notre Dame, And I will give them their props because they deserve every ounce of it. You will not win any games playing the way that we played. Completely outplayed on offense, defense, and especially special teams. Three mistakes, three turnovers led to 21 points in the first half of Notre Dame, and that was something that we just never recovered from.
Let me ask you a question here. There's a lot of youth, obviously, on the Trojans. Now, next year, are you bringing back a significant number of experienced and seasoned players?
Absolutely. My biggest concern is, for the most part, everybody's is a junior that would be cause of concern to possibly leave and go school early. Not really a senior-led team right now. The only major person that we'd have to worry about leaving early is Sam Darnold. If he returns, then expectations, once again, for USC will be out of this world, because a lot of players are young, and freshmen are getting a lot of playing time because of all the injuries. All their players are coming back. A lot of sophomores are getting playing time. A lot of juniors are all over the field are getting playing time and will be back. So, yeah, they're young right now, but this can only go up and get better for us in the long haul.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Unfortunately, I think your quarterback is hitting the NFL, but there are plenty of good players coming in behind. So that is obviously a team to watch for next year.
There have been reports that he's staying potentially, but there have also been reports a month prior that he's going. So.
Yeah, it's gonna go back and forth like that until the draft, or pretty close to the draft, you know, the way they work it out these days. Coming up this week, we've got a Friday game. That's FSU at BC, and I believe Chris kind of alluded to that a little bit earlier and possibilities there that Boston College might have a win over the Seminoles. It's very possible. Miami is going to go to North Carolina. Louisville at Wake. That should be an interesting game. Virginia at Pitt is another interesting game. That was a toss-up in my head. Duke at Virginia Tech. I don't think that's much to worry about there. Georgia Tech at Clemson. That could end up being a critical game for both. But yeah. The big game next week, or this week actually, is number 14, North Carolina State, facing off with number 9, Notre Dame. Xavion, let me stick with you here for just a moment. And is there, you know, I know what you guys have picked, but let's elaborate a little bit more here. I'm not really sure. I've seen both play. And quite honestly, that was a toss-up game for me to some degree. What are your thoughts?
I really honestly don't remember who I picked. I think I picked Notre Dame off the strength of winning the last week. I really don't. Did I pick Notre Dame?
No, I think you picked NC State. So oh, okay. I think you're the oddball out this week.
Okay. Well, okay. Now you're right. I did pick NC State. Well, okay. So my belief is the reason why I believe NC State will win is because a lot of times you have a big game or a rivalry game the week prior, you put all your energy and focus, especially too. Notre Dame had a bye week going into the USC game. So a week to get healthy, an extra week to plan. When you have all that time to put all that focus and energy and stuff like that, and you have that type of a lopsided win, and especially now everybody in the media is throwing Notre Dame and potentially playoff and all this stuff, you have the opportunity to lose focus and kind of take advantage of teams thinking that you are lesser, even a team as good as NC State. I also think, and I'm not 100% sure if NC State was off this past week. I believe they were. That gives them extra time to plan and kind of figure out how to stop the potent rushing game for Notre Dame. Because I've said this earlier in the season, and I still say it now. If you can stop and contain the rushing game for Notre Dame like Georgia did, you will walk away with victory. Because if they're forced to pass, Wimbush has not done anything, even with what he did in the USC game, to convince me that he is a capable passer to win a game for a team.
All right, Will, Notre Dame, NC State. I know where you went. You went with the Irish.
Yeah, but I actually completely agree with everything Xavion said, especially the part where if Notre Dame gets behind and they're forced to pass, that Wimbush is not a good passing quarterback, and that could hinder them. But I think this is definitely going to be a great game because you got with Notre Dame is obviously a very good rushing team, but you've also got NC State's defensive line, which is one of the best in the league, definitely, and probably one of the best in the country, especially with Bradley Chubb there. And he's got this team. This is going to be an interesting matchup. The reason I lean Notre Dame is just because even though I say that their NC State's defensive line could stop them, I still think that they're still going to find a way to still jam it down the Wolfpack's throat and win this game. But by no means do I think this is going to be an easy win. This is probably will be a game decided by a field goal or less.
So this is a game to watch. This is the game this week to really keep an eye on. I still think there's a couple of upsets on that list, but we'll have to watch and see, right? Should be fun. Another fun week. Well, Xavion, any final thoughts for us this week?
I want to touch on what I was briefly touching on with the whole Mark Richt and bring it back over to USC real quick with Clay Helton. So far this season, I've been deeply disappointed in how he's been able to manage this team and with the coordinators and everything. And that's kind of why I touched on why I feel so strongly about Miami. When you have a great coach that is always composed, has a game plan, sticks to the game plan, but at the same time, when that game plan is not working and is able to create a counter game plan and execute it almost to perfection, or at least execute it to win, that's a great team, regardless of what the players do on the field in most instances. What's going on in Southern California right now is we have great players who are being put in position to essentially fail from what we've been seeing. The play calling on the offensive side of the ball has been completely atrocious, except for really the Stanford game, where Clay Helton always talks about having balance on offense and for running the ball and passing the ball. You can't have balance every single week. Some teams are going to either give you the passing game or they're going to give you the running game. And a lot of teams at this point in time are giving us the passing game because they saw how potent this running game can be. And for whatever odd reason, he still wants to run the ball straight dives out of shotgun and out of pistol sets to run up the middle on third and one on the goal line and stuff like that. So right now, I'm not going to say it, but he's on a nice lukewarm seat that's getting warmer by the second, Clay Helton and the USC staff. If we go on to finish 2-2 for the season or anything less than potentially run the table at end of the season, it's highly likely that he could be on his way out at USC.
Interesting. Okay. Will, your final thoughts?
I sort of cringe there when Xavion was talking about pistol formations and shotgun formations near the goal line, because I think I really, it's just a huge pet peeve of mine. You should be lining up under center, and you could do a whole lot more, out of that. But I do have a couple of final thoughts for the week. One, with the World Series going on, I'm just going to say I'm taking the Astros in seven to win the World Series. And number two, with the new athletic director hired this week at Virginia with Carla Williams, I think it's going to turn out to be an outstanding hire. Just reading up a little bit about her and her history at Georgia and just watching the introductory press conference, I think Virginia absolutely hit this one out of the park with in terms of getting a high character woman who is going to uphold the academic standards, compared with athletics that the university has always had. And she I was completely, I'm completely on board with this hire. Great job by the university.
Definitely want to echo the same thing. Craig Littlepage, what a great guy, and has done a superb job for the University of Virginia. And you knew that it was going to be a difficult task to find somebody of the same quality to take over as he retired. And congratulations to the University of Virginia for the hire in Carla Williams.
One of the things I was taken back by when she was, you know, during that press conference, she was talking about how she was having a conversation with Coach Mendenhall, and he was, you know, talking, you know, they were getting to know, and all of a sudden she just was like randomly like interrupted and was like, "Can I shake your hand?" Like, yeah, I think those two, I think she definitely, I think that's definitely her kind of coach right there.
The comments that I've seen definitely point in that direction. Good stuff to see. For Will Ogin and Chris Bond and Xavion, I'm Jim Quist.
School
fight on.
Slanja.